Dave Smith Unleashed brought to you by MTS, reliable on-time deliveries, compliance you can count on, round-the-clock support 24/7, superior communication skills by all my friends over at MTS, experienced logistic partners, and here's the big thing right now. Mention Dave Smith Unleashed and get 20% off on your next shipment. So if you have any freight or shipping needs, mention Dave Smith Unleashed. Get 20% off all your shipments. So make sure you call 800-640-6873. 800-640-6873. MTS, the only service you need for your freight and shipping needs. Welcome to Dave Smith Unleashed, a very historic day. It is the first edition of Dave Smith Unleashed, and of course we have lots to talk about in the world of sports and current events and true crime and just about anything we feel like talking about here. But let's start out with the Final Four that happened over the weekend. I still can't believe what I saw last night. John Shire, the new coach at Duke, John Shire and the Blue Devils are up 15 points in the second half over Houston and Kelvin Sampson. 35 seconds to go. Duke's up 6, and they have possession of the basketball. You think that's a lock, right? Especially back in the days when Coach K was around. This thing is a lock, because not only did Duke always have great teams, not only were they one of the favorites, but you knew the officials were going to be favoring Duke in almost every situation. But shockingly last night, Duke was actually on the bad end of a call. Now, as Duke was being rattled by Houston's pressure and rattled by Houston's defense, when they came back from the 15-point deficit, they still had a one-point lead, and they were at the free throw line. Duke misses a free throw, and the young freshman star Cooper Flagg is called for an over-the-back call. Now, I guarantee you this right now. There's no way that was a foul. Absolutely not. That was a terrible call. Duke got screwed on that call. But the amazing thing is that it was Duke. Because you look over the last 35, 40 years when Coach K was there, every single call went their way. They get the benefit of the doubt always with the officiating. And I guarantee you one thing. If Coach K was still on the sideline for Duke Houston, there's no way the referees make that call. But John Shire, I guess maybe they feel like he needs a little more seasoning, the officials. They call Cooper Flagg for over the back. It was a terrible call that should have been a play on, as Bill Raftery said. Houston gets the ball, makes their free throws down the stretch, and then miraculously, they win 70-67. That's one of the great collapses in NCAA tournament history. And the young kid, Cooper Flagg, that might be his last college game, although he was tremendous last night with 25 points. But how about Duke getting screwed over by the officials? Now, did you ever think you would hear those words coming from a team coached by Mike Krzyzewski? I never thought I would. And that brings up the question here. Back when John Wooden was coaching at UCLA, it was pretty well established that you had to go 5-7 every game. You had to play John Wooden's great Bruin teams plus the two officials that were going to give UCLA all the calls. Now, after Wooden was gone a few years later, here comes Coach K. Then it was Duke. You had to play 5-7 or 5-8 when they added that third official. You knew you weren't going to get the benefit of the calls when you played Duke. But who's it going to be now? Now that Coach K is gone and it looks like John Shire isn't getting the calls anymore, who's going to be the next coach in the NCAA that the officials are going to favor, that the NCAA wants to win? Who brings in the most revenue? Who brings in the most interest? And that was always UCLA, and it was always Duke. It still could be Duke. Like I said, maybe they want John Shire to get a little bit more seasoning here. Maybe they don't feel that he deserves the calls yet. He certainly didn't in that Houston game. It might be him, but who else? When you look around the college landscape, you know, the veteran coaches, John Calipari, Rick Pitino, they're not really too popular with the NCAA. I don't think they're going to get the benefit of calls. Kelvin Sampson, he's never won a national championship. He's been in trouble with the NCAA before. I don't know who. I think it will probably still be Duke once John Shire is still there a little while. But credit to Houston last night. They play about as hard as any college team I've ever seen. Defensively, the way they scrambled, the way they hit the offensive glass, that was a very, very impressive performance by Houston last night. The never-say-die Cougars with the offensive rebounds, playing hard for 40 minutes, making their free throws at the end of the game. They're not a great team. They're not a great team offensively, which is why I thought Duke would beat them last night. But, boy, you got to play 40 minutes, and you got to play every second of that 40 minutes against them. Because as we saw, they're going to fight and claw and scratch all the way to the end. And if you make a couple of mistakes, if you get a call or two that go your way, and Duke turned it over against the pressure. Duke missed a couple of free throws. Cooper Flagg missed an easy shot toward the end of the game. You never know. It's never over till that final buzzer goes off and Houston winds up pulling off the upset. And now who do they go up against in the finals? Well, Florida, young Todd Golden and the Florida Gators, who came, again, a double-digit deficit to Auburn and Bruce Pearl. They came back and found a way to win. And I tell you what, we have found a new star in Walter Clayton Jr. At Florida. They were in trouble against UConn. They were certainly in trouble against Auburn. You know, down double digits to both teams. And this kid, every single game, this kid makes clutch shot after clutch shot after clutch shot. He's definitely, in my opinion, the most outstanding player of this tournament so far. And without him, I think they would have been gone in the second round against UConn, the two-time defending NCAA champion. So now we got a final of Florida coming up against Houston. You know, nobody thought Houston could beat Duke. Florida's favored in the championship game and should win. But, you know, when you play as hard as Houston, why not? Why not Kelvin Sampson and the Cougars? And I'll tell you one thing. One reason I'll be pulling for Houston on Monday night is because they've been to the Final Four 6 times. Remember all those times under Guy Lewis, and they went once under Kelvin Sampson? I still haven't forgotten 1983, the Phi Slamma Jamma Houston Cougars. And we can talk all we want about Guy Lewis was not a good coach, and I don't believe he was a good coach. And he never should have brought Clyde Drexler back into that game against North Carolina State when he had 3 fouls in the first half. In the second half, when Houston put on a good run, remember they went up 7 on North Carolina State and they had all the momentum. And then Guy Lewis took the air out of the ball and went into that four-corner stall to give Hakeem a break when he was on the bench, which I thought was one of the worst coaching moves in NCAA Finals history. Yes, all that is true. But what we can't forget is the officiating. Why does nobody ever talk about how Houston got screwed by the officials there in the championship game? And when you go back and look at that first half, Clyde got 3 fouls in the first half. Then Guy Lewis foolishly put him back into the game in the first half, and he got his 4th. But when you look at that, none of the 4 were fouls. They were all BS, ticky-tack, bogus calls, especially that last one. His 4th foul, if you remember the charge against Terry Gannon, that might have been the worst call in the history of NCAA basketball. When Clyde was going up for a dunk and Gannon came from underneath him, wrapped both of his arms around him and literally tackled him. It was like a football tackle, and they call an offensive foul on Clyde. That was for the referees completely took him out of the game that night. None of the 4 fouls should have been called. That 4th one was awful. They took Drexler out of the game, the officials, and I think that's what cost Houston the game, despite the fact, agreed, Guy Lewis wasn't a good coach. He shouldn't have put Clyde back into the game. That stall he went into with a 7-point lead was stupid. Despite all that, if the referees don't screw over Clyde Drexler, I think Houston wins that game double digits. So I'd like to see Houston kind of make up for that. And I've always said that Houston team and the 1970 Jacksonville Dolphins are the two best teams not to win an NCAA championship. And getting back to UCLA again and John Wooden and the officiating, the 1970 Jacksonville team, it was the first team in NCAA history to average 100 points a game. They averaged 103. It had never been done before. The great Artis Gilmore was the center. And they averaged 29 free throw attempts per game that year. Cinderella Jacksonville, who was a junior college just a couple of years before, they make it all the way to the NCAA championship game against UCLA's great John Wooden team, the Sidney Wicks Curtis Rowe team. You know what the free throw disparity was in that game? You want to talk about getting the old Scroogey by the Zebras. 35 free throw attempts for UCLA, 8 for Jacksonville. Again, this is a Jacksonville team that averaged 103 points a game. A Jacksonville team that averaged 29 free throw attempts per game. They shot 8 that night, and they only scored 69 points. And here's something, if you're not convinced by now. Jacksonville's 4 best players, Artis Gilmore, Pembroke Burrow, Vaughn Wedeking, Rex Morgan, their 4 best players combined had 1 free throw attempt. In case you didn't hear that right, their 4 best players had a combined 1 free throw. That, in my opinion, is the worst screw job in the history of the NCAA Final Championship game, what happened to Jacksonville that night. And Tom Wasden, their assistant coach, he wrote a book about how that game was rigged and how they got screwed over by the referees. And he said at the Final Four, after they won their first game in the Final Four, before the championship game, he said a bunch of coaches and some established coaches came up to him in the hotel lobby and said, "You're not going to win tomorrow." And back then, the championship game was on a Saturday. "You're not going to win tomorrow. The NCAA doesn't like you. You have a predominantly black team. They have long hair. They have afros. They don't feel like they're a good example for the NCAA. This is back in 1970. You are not going to be allowed to win. Sorry. And what happened on Saturday? 35 free throws to 8. So, yeah, that I think Jacksonville and the 83-5 Slam-a-Jamma Houston team, those are the two best teams not to win NCAA championship. And while we're talking about the officiating here, I've often said that college basketball officials are the worst in all of organized sports. And they're not proving me wrong during the tournament here. I mean, constantly blowing the whistles, constantly trips to the free throw line. Everybody's in foul trouble, ticky-tack fouls. And now if that's not bad enough, you've got four television timeouts per half for the TV games at 16, 12, 8, and 4. So you've got eight TV timeouts, which are 5 minutes each. Each coach gets six, so that's 12 more breaks. So that's 25-minute breaks in a 40-minute game. It makes the games unwatchable. There's too many breaks. And when you combine that with the referees blowing their whistle every 2 seconds, I don't know how these guys ever break a sweat out there. The player, they're standing around. They're either in a huddle during a commercial break or they're standing around watching somebody shoot free throws. It's hard to get any flow in the games these days. So I think, first of all, you've either got to cut the TV timeouts down, which aren't going to happen because financially it's not going to happen. I think you should cut the coaches' timeouts down from 6 to 3, in my opinion. Because you don't need 6 timeouts when you've got 8 TV timeouts. So, again, college basketball officiating is an abomination. It's atrocious. And you throw in all the breaks and all the TV timeouts, it's hard to get any flow out there. It's no wonder the scoring is down in college basketball with all the breaks these guys take. All that being said, I like Florida, but I'll be pulling for Houston. I picked Florida to win this thing before it started, so I like looking smart. It makes me look smart if the Gators win, but you know, going back to Five Slam-a-Jamma and the Houston days, I'd love to see them finally get one. And Kelvin Sampson, who's a really good guy, I'd like to see him get one as well. It's Dave Smith on Dave Smith Unleashed, brought to you by MTS. And the initial podcast going on right now, this is historic, and hopefully we're going to do at least one or two a week and maybe expand as time goes by. You know, another thing I wanted to touch on here is all the whining about the Dodgers. How many media types and how many people do you keep hearing that the Dodgers are ruining baseball because of their $300 million payroll? And it's not fair. And they won the World Series last year. Then they go out and sign a Sasaki, the Japanese pitcher, and go out and spend a whole bunch of money. They spent over $100 million in the offseason. And all the whining, the Dodgers are ruining baseball. How many times have we heard that? Now, I think those of you who have listened to me over the years, you know I'm not a Dodgers fan. Never been a Dodgers. I grew up an Angels fan. I've never been a Dodgers fan. But this is, I'm going to defend them here. The whining and the bitching and the moaning about how they're ruining baseball is laughable to me. They're playing within the rules. Baseball doesn't have a salary cap. Now, they're willing to pay the luxury tax, you know, spending more money than other teams. To me, they're playing by the rules, and they're doing whatever it takes to win. And the fans should love that. They won the World Series last year. They improved themselves in the offseason. And everybody's whining and crying about a team that's actually trying to win. Let me fill you in on something. I'll fill you in on something here. Every single owner in baseball is a billionaire. Every one of them. Every team in every city. And they could all be doing the same thing. Now, here's the dirty little secret. Some owners want to win, and some don't. The owners of the Dodgers want to win. The owners of the Yankees want to win. Some other power teams, the Red Sox, they've always put in the best effort to win. But there's a lot of owners in Major League Baseball who are perfectly content to turn a profit every year, to collect their billions in television money, and they don't give a damn whether they win or lose. They want to turn a profit. And then when the fans put some pressure on them, why aren't you doing this, why aren't you doing that? Well, then they start crying, wow, we can't compete with the power teams like the Dodgers and the Yankees. You know, they can outspend us. They get all the good play. You're a billionaire. Shut up. You could be doing the same thing. They want to win and you don't. Quit your whining. Quit your complaining. You know what? If you can't keep up, if you're going to be a baby about it, sell the team. Sell the team to somebody with more money than you. But why would you criticize the Dodgers for spending money and trying to win? Isn't that what it's all about? That's what they're supposed to be doing. And their fans appreciate it. And all of you out there complaining about how much money the players make, who cares? You know, if they don't make it, it goes in the owners' pockets, right? So I say better the players than the owners. And Nobody's pointing a gun at your head. If you think they're making too much money, if you think the Dodgers are ruining baseball, is anybody forcing you to watch these games or buy tickets or go to the games? Quit your whining and quit your crying. And I say praise the Dodgers for doing what it takes to win. And again, I'm not a Dodgers fan. I don't want them to win. But I give them all the credit in the world for what they're doing here, for spending money and trying to win, bringing in Sasaki, bringing in Yamamoto, bringing in all these players in the offseason. And the Mets, that's another team, all the money they gave Juan Soto. Now, whether that'll be a good contract or not, who knows? But that's a team trying to win. Everybody's top priority should be winning in Major League Baseball. Again, the owners are all billionaires. See, you know, cry me a river. Don't cry for me, Argentina. If you're a multi-billionaire, you're going to come. Billionaires complaining about billionaires spending too much money. Now that's a laugh, isn't it? Dave Smith here and Dave Smith Unleashed. Got a great guest coming up in a few minutes as well that you're all going to want to listen to. The great Jim Lampley will be coming on here, you know, formerly of HBO Boxing, formerly of NFL and college football play-by-play and basketball. One of the all-time greats in the media business. He'll be joining us coming up here on Dave Smith Unleashed, of course, brought to you by MTS Freight and Shipping. Now, speaking of the Lakers, you know, when that first trade went down with Anthony Davis for Luka Doncic, I actually thought the Mavericks kind of got the better of that one. Now, it remains to be seen because Anthony Davis, of course, got injured right away with the Mavericks. Kyrie Irving tears the ACL. He's out for the year. You know, Gafford is out. They would have had AD and Gafford and 3 7-footers out there who can protect the rim and play defense, plus Klay Thompson and Kyrie. I like that Dallas team. I thought they had a chance to come out of the West with that full team. But the problem is, can they stay healthy, which they haven't done? Now, the Lakers, on the other hand, now, of course, you've got Luka and LeBron. That's about as good as it gets for a duo in the NBA. Luka is a great offensive player, and LeBron at 40. I mean, averaging, what, 26-8-8 and shooting over 50% from the floor? What LeBron's doing is unbelievable at 22 years in the league and at 40 years old. But they are absolutely awful defensively. LeBron isn't as good defensively as he used to be. And I tell you one thing, Luka couldn't guard me out there. You ever seen Luka try and play defense? It's a complete joke the way everybody blows by him. The first thing, as great as he is offensively, he's also lazy. He's always overweight. He's always fat. And he never plays any defense. He has to get into better shape. That's one of the reasons Dallas made this move. Even though he's only 26 years old. You know, if you can be an old 26, that's him, you know, because he's been playing professionally in Europe since he was 14 years old. So he's only 26, but he's been playing professional basketball since he's 14. The injuries have been piling up a little bit. He's always overweight. He's always lazy. He goes to Slovenia in the offseason, and I think all he does is eat and drink. He comes to training camp looking like a beached whale every year. So I think that's one of the reasons, you know, he was up for a contract extension this summer. And it was going to be $350 million for 5 years. $70 million a year. And I think Dallas was thinking, he's 26. He's kind of an old 26. This will take him all the way up till he's 31 years old. If he's fat and out of shape and lazy and not listening to us now, what's he going to be like making $70 million? If he's making $40 million and he's out of shape, what's he going to be like when he's making $70 million and has 5 more years left in his deal? So I don't think they wanted to go long-term on him. So did they make the right decision? Well, we're going to have to see, aren't we? Because hopefully LeBron will have an influence on Luka, because nobody's in better shape than LeBron. Nobody takes care of his body better than he does. He spends $1 million every year in conditioning, getting ready for the next season, which is why he can still do this at 40 years old. If I were Luka, I would not go home this offseason. I'd stay and train with LeBron in the offseason here, because the Lakers aren't going to win a championship this year because defensively they're awful. You know, losing AD, that really hurt them in their interior defensively. And they got nobody. And LeBron really can't stay in front of anybody anymore. Luka can't guard anybody. They don't have anybody on the backside who can guard you. Defensively, they're not good enough to win. Now, in the offseason, they're going to have to make a move. If they can bring in a good big man who can defend and score a little bit, well, then this, in the long run, could turn out to be a good trade for the Lakers if Luka gets into shape and stays healthy. Then I think they'll be all right. But right now, I think the jury's kind of out here because Dallas has been so injured and so hurt about who got the best of this. I thought initially Dallas got the better of it right away. But we'll see. You know, with AD's in history of injuries, and, you know, Clay's getting into his mid-30s, and Kyrie's in his 30s now, and he's hurt, and, you know, Gafford's hurt again, and so we'll see. I think in the long run, the Lakers will probably get the better of it, but that's going to depend on Luka getting his fat ass in shape and how much longer LeBron can play. I think it depends on how much longer LeBron wants to play. In my opinion, I think he can go to at least 45. I think he's got 5 years left. The way he keeps his body in condition, hell, he's 25-8-8 now, and he's shooting over 50%. He's still one of the top five players in the league, in my opinion. So yeah, now, I don't know if he wants to play that long, but why can't he be another Tom Brady playing effectively till he's 45 years old? You know, he wants to play with Bronny. You know, Bronny's younger brother Bryce is a senior in high school now, who's a very good player that just got a scholarship to Arizona. He might be a one and done. Who knows? LeBron could be playing with both of them a year from now with the Lakers. But Lakers to win a championship? No. To come out of the West? No. Can they maybe win a first-round playoff series? Maybe. But defense, now, let's be realistic here. If you're going up against Denver in the second round, who's guarding the Joker? Jackson Hayes? Are you kidding? When you talk about winning the series? No, the Lakers are going to have a big problem against quality big men come playoff time. And especially teams with good guards, because the Lakers can't defend in the backcourt. So I say first round, maybe they get past and that's it. Now the offseason, see, the pressure's going to be on Rob Pelinka and the Lakers to bring in a good big guy, to bring in a third wheel here for the Lakers. Let's talk a little boxing as well. I always love talking boxing, especially with Jim Lampley coming up. We got Canelo Alvarez coming up against Terrence Crawford. Evidently, that's going to be happening in the Middle East, in Saudi Arabia or Dubai, with the Turki Alashik, the new power broker in boxing, the new promoter. That's an interesting matchup, isn't it? Now, people talk about Canelo's a little bit on the downside, which he is. He's not as good as he used to be, a little bit on the downside. But I think people are forgetting, you know, Terrence Crawford's older than Canelo. Still looks good, still looks great, but he's a couple of years older than Canelo. And I think you got to factor in here that Crawford's moving up three weight classes for this fight. He's going from welterweight all the way up to super middleweight, 147 up to 168, even though he's fought at 54. So you got to figure Canelo's going to have the edge here, especially in Crawford's last fight. Remember, he fought that Russian guy at 154, and he was hard-pressed to win. That was a close fight all the way to the end. The guy put a lot of pressure on him, and Crawford didn't handle it well. So I think you got to go Canelo at 68, although I will say this. The guys who have given Canelo problems over the years, the guys who have given him fits, are the good boxers who can move, give him some movement and stick and move. Floyd Mayweather schooled him when they fought a few years ago. Arislandi Lara, I thought, got robbed and should have won the decision over Canelo. Triple G, I thought, won both fights against Canelo, even though he wound up with a draw and a loss. Guys who can box a little, especially slicksters, guys who can box and move, have always given Canelo problems. And who's better at slipping in and out, boxing, side-to-side movement than Terrence Crawford? So for that reason, I think Crawford certainly has a chance here, and certainly with Canelo on the downside. Although you got to give Canelo the edge on 168 pounds. Dave Smith here on Dave Smith Unleashed, the initial offering. And, of course, we're going to be going at least once a week to start, maybe two or three times a week, depending on how well this is going. Brought to you, of course, by MTS Freight and Shipping for all your freight and shipping needs. You know, before we get to Jim Lampley here, a couple other topics I want to discuss here. Somebody told me the other day that Floyd Mayweather is the greatest fighter of all time, pound for pound. And I didn't want to be rude, but I laughed in his face. That's ridiculous. Taking nothing away from Floyd, he's 50-0, whatever it is. He's fighting in an era that benefits him. You know, there's two things. He kind of picked and chosen his opponents carefully over the years, where he always gives himself an advantage. He waited 7 years to fight Manny Pacquiao. He got Canelo when Canelo was only 21 years old and inexperienced. And they're very good at selecting opponents they're certain that he can beat. And let's face it, the competition he's faced. Come on. You put Floyd Mayweather back into the 80s, which to me was the golden era of welterweight boxing. Yeah, he's undefeated now. Let's look back at what he would have had to have gone through back then. Would you have been saying he's the greatest fighter of all time? Or he would have never been a world champion back in the 80s in the welterweight division. Sugar Ray Leonard, are you kidding me? You think Sugar Ray Leonard would have knocked Floyd out? He was 5'10". He was about 4 or 5 inches taller than him. He had knockout power in both hands. His hands were faster than Floyd. He was a better boxer. He had more power than Floyd. There's no way. That's a maybe 8 to 10 round knockout for Sugar Ray Leonard over Floyd. That to me, that's a mismatch. Now, the biggest mismatch of all, let's talk Tommy Hearns. I think Tommy would have starched Floyd in about 2 rounds, the same way he did Roberto Duran, the same way he did a lot of guys. You think a 6'2" Tommy Hearns, who punches like a heavyweight and was also a great boxer, against a 5'6" Floyd Mayweather, you know, who likes to lay on the ropes and block with his shoulder and keep his left hand down? Are you kidding? Tommy would have blasted him out of there in around 2 rounds. That is the worst matchup possible for Floyd. A guy 8 inches taller than him with a huge reach advantage who punches like a heavyweight and is also has fast hands and a good boxer. Tommy would have blasted him out there real fast. Roberto Duran? No, Floyd, no. Roberto Duran would have pressured him. He would have run him right out of the ring. And I think he would have won an easy decision over Floyd. Aaron Pryor, I got to go with him over Floyd too, with the pressure factor. You look at, and in my opinion, I think Floyd does have one loss. When he fought Jose Luis Castillo in 2002, I thought Castillo won that fight 8 rounds to 4. I thought he got robbed in that fight. And you say, well, Dave, the record book says Floyd's 50-0. The record book doesn't matter. What matters is what I say. And in my book, I scored that fight for Castillo. So Floyd's 49-1, in my opinion. Could he beat Aaron Pryor? No. Could he have beaten Wilfred Benitez? I don't think so. I think Wilfred would have outslicked him at 47. Here's one that always gets people mad at me. When you look at Donald Cobra Curry, when he was in his prime in the early 80s, he was a great fighter. Now, he had drug problems and emotional issues and he wasn't on top long. But at his best, early, I think he beats Floyd easy. I picked Donald Curry over him. Now, if you want to talk lightweight, now that's a different story. I think that was Floyd's best weight at 135. Now, he's competitive against most people in history, I think, at that weight. But at welterweight, people saying he's the greatest fighter of all time, that's a complete joke. He fought in the right era, that's for sure. No way is he the greatest fighter of all time. Oh, by the way, getting away from sports a little bit here, did you see all the rallies against Elon Musk and Doge all over the country yesterday? And the way people are, it's, you know, what's really fascinating to me and it's really interesting to me is just, what was it, a year or two ago, the people on the left, they loved Elon Musk. They loved Tesla. Remember the commercials? Oh, get out there and buy a Tesla. You're saving the environment with electric cars. Elon is such a great guy. He's going against the petroleum industry. He's going against the gasoline industry. He's against big oil. He's got his electric car. Everybody loved Elon. But the second he came out and endorsed Donald Trump, boy, the knives came out, didn't they? Now everybody hates him. They're firebombing Tesla dealerships. They're keying cars. And there was a case the other day. There was a 61-year-old woman driving, and some guy came barreling up behind her, forced her off the road, and then beat her with his fists, unconscious, because she was driving a Tesla. That's where we've gone. We have such a divide in this country. It doesn't. I have seen... My next-door neighbor across the street was telling me about his family members. That when you talk about that Trump derangement syndrome, how it divides family. They don't have Christmas dinner together anymore. It's just amazing how it divides. How families hate each other. Friends and family hate each other. Oh, over politics? Are you kidding? The gym where I go to, I mean, it's a bunch of great guys. We all get along great together. We all joke around. See, this is the way it should be. Some people there love Donald Trump and they're MAGA all the way. Others who work out there don't like him, despise him, vote it the other way, and don't like anything he stands for. But you know what? When we're at the gym with his name, we all laugh about it. Like his picture will be on the TV and say, there's your guy. Or Kamala will be up there, there's your girl. We laugh about it. We're all good friends. That's the way it should be. You set that aside and you're friends. It's like these teams, remember the Warriors back in the day? They refused to go to the White House when Trump was president and other sports teams refused to go. And on the other end, maybe there was hockey teams and hockey players who refused to go to the White House because they didn't like Barack Obama. Remember, Tom Brady didn't go to the White House 1 year after a Super Bowl win. It's just amazing to me. Can't we put this aside for at least one day? Can't you put your politics aside? It's an honor. I don't care who the president is, if it's Obama or George Bush or Trump, if I'm a professional athlete. If you get invited to the White House, you go to the Rose Garden, you put on a suit, you shake his hand, you say, thank you, Mr. President, you pose for pictures. It's an honor. Doesn't matter who the president is. You can't put it aside for one day. Well, I hate this president so much, I'm not even going to go there and pose and celebrate our world championship. And to me, it's just absolutely ridiculous. And I saw an interesting poll here in California the other day. It said, after the disaster with the fires and after the disaster of Karen Bass and Gavin Newsom, it said 50% of California now thinks they might vote Republican in the gubernatorial election coming up in 2026. Now, is there a wind of change out here? Could California maybe going a little Florida or Texas-ish? Have people had it? And I really think the people I talked to after the fire, the way Gavin and Karen Bass completely mishandled the fire situation out here and turned off the water and Karen Bass not allowing permits for people to rebuild their homes in the Palisades and Pasadena, I think so. And who could, if Kamala Harris runs for governor here, who's going to run against you? Well, Nicole Shanahan is thinking about running. You know, she's the billionaire Silicon Valley person who used to be liberal. Now she's a MAGA Trump person, and she's a billionaire. So, she's a Silicon Valley insider. She knows how the game works. She knows how California politics works. She was the VP candidate with Bobby Kennedy Jr. You know, Rick Grenell. Now, Rick Grenell is interesting, isn't he? He's a gay, conservative, Republican Trump supporter. Now, would that fly in California? You figure with a lot of the left socialist policies here, being gay would be a plus for some of the voters. Maybe not that he's a Republican. So could he win? I'm not sure he could. And the reason I would be a little hesitant about Rick Grenell is because he's not a billionaire. See, Nicole Shanahan doesn't have to play ball and doesn't have to kiss ass with the Republican Party back in Washington, D.C. and the RNC, try to get money. And then you kind of have to do what they tell you to do. And you're kind of an establishment person. Now, Nicole Shanahan's a multi-billionaire. She can self-finance and doesn't need to do it. So I think I would be more in favor of her running. And I tell you one thing. I don't know if you agree with me or not, but I think Kamala is eminently beatable running for governor. Could we have a Republican governor? Well, Arnold won twice, didn't he? He won the recall election, and then he won the general election. I remember George Dukmejian back in the day, Ronald Reagan. You know, outside of San Francisco and L.A., California, people never believe me about this. It's kind of a conservative state, so who knows? Maybe the worm is turning. Dave Smith Unleashed. We got Jim Lampley coming up next, and of course brought to you by MTS Shipping and Freight. Call 800-640-6873. Appliance you can count on. Round-the-clock support. Superior communication experience. Logistic partners. Mention Dave Smith Unleashed, and of course get 20% off all your shipping needs. The great Jim Lampley, formerly of HBO Sports, coming up next on Dave Smith Unleashed. Wow.